911. What are you reporting?
We got someone or something crawling around out here.
Did you see what it was? Was it a person or an animal or?
I can't tell. All I know is that my sensor light came on and I just happened to glimpse and see this thing running across the yard.
Sir? Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
But he's all in black.
Is he in your yard, sir?
Yeah, God, he's big.
Okay, what's he doing in your yard?
He's looking at me.
Catapults of propaganda. The truth out there.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill. The military industrial complex.
PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody. And welcome to the bunker this lovely May 16th of 2006. And I just said to Derek, you know there's a hidden 666 in today's
game. And I did not know that.
There is.
Okay, how is that?
51606.
Mm-hmm.
Five plus one.
Oh, right.
Six.
Duh. I was just explaining before we started tonight that math was not my strong suit. My strong suit is the snazzy camel hair number that I wear from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, tonight we've got, the very first worldwide screening of the new Pentagon videotape right here on PID Radio. Oh, wait.
We have no visuals
on this show.
Oh, if you could only see.
We'll describe
it. Nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, that's right. You won't get a better view than you will get right here on PID Radio.
That's
the whole point. That's the whole point.
You know, there are rumors out there that up until 1 o'clock, which of course is 1,300 hours, the plan had been to release a different video. But at the last minute, they released these videos of CCTV cameras
mm-hmm.
that were worthless.
Yep.
And in fact, to me, it just looks even more like a missile, what little they show you.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the point. I think everybody who has been watching this with a critical eye, the 9/11 researchers, those who are even a bit suspicious about the lack of debris or damage to the lawn in front of the Pentagon on September 11th of 2001, really didn't expect the Pentagon to release anything to Judicial Watch today that was going to be a smoking gun or show anything new. They've had almost 4.5 years to clean up anything that they mm-hmm. were going to show. And in fact, what they showed today was bupkis.
For goodness sake, this is the Pentagon we're talking about. The most paranoid group of people.
Outside the CIA, maybe.
Outside the CIA,
yeah,
maybe.
But still.
But they would have had CCTV footage from every angle,
mm-hmm.
especially on that side,
right.
because it had been under construction,
sure.
which makes it more vulnerable because you've got construction workers coming in.
Right.
And who knows what could get in through there, who could get in through there.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they would have been remiss.
Yes.
And the notion that those cameras weren't functioning that day.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
We forgot to change the tapes.
Oh, we feel sick about
Johnny
it.
Johnny kicked out the cord.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. Even the was it the mobile station across the street?
Yeah.
Which had a CCTV camera.
That's one of the ones they released today.
That was one of the ones they released?
Yes.
Okay, because that was one I know that they confiscated within like an hour.
I know,
of the
but there's nothing
event.
On there. Nothing.
Gee.
You see this little blip that goes by in one frame
mm-hmm.
because these cameras, we're told, only take one frame every so many seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a smooth video. Well, what they've done is just released the same old pictures they released early on, and they've just made them into a video.
Okay.
Or actually let us see the video. But I'm convinced that it's smoke and mirrors. Here's what I asked myself today. Mm-hmm. I asked you too. Why today?
Well, that's the question. Even when information comes out that's not really information, it doesn't really tell us anything new. We can deduce things from the timing of the release or non-release, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
So why today? What is going on today that led the government to finally decide to cough up some pictures that people have been wanting to get their hands on since September 12th of 2001? Frankly, I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know. I know there were some things with the intelligence, the nuclear commission. There's a nuclear, and I'd have to look it up. Sorry about that. Don't have it in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember seeing that there was a story that the Department of Energy is absorbing an intelligence agency that was put in there as a safety measure.
Huh.
A nuclear intelligence agency. And
okay.
They have now been absorbed, as I said, by the Department of Energy. I can't imagine that that's something that the American people are going to go, what?
No. The other thing that's been rumored, though, which might have something to do with it, are the rumors that Patrick Fitzgerald, the special prosecutor, might be ready to indict Karl Rove in
the Valerie Plame scandal. Dick Cheney.
Or possibly Dick Cheney.
Because supposedly Cheney actually wrote him, wrote in the margins of a report.
Mm-hmm.
Phrases that it could be construed led Rove to do what he did.
Yeah.
In other words, Cheney's the one who ordered him to do it.
Mm-hmm. So that might have been what was behind the release today. I mean, it's an old tactic that's been used many, many times mm-hmm. throughout the past. I mean, Bill Clinton was famous mm-hmm. for launching missiles at Saddam or Osama or an aspirin factory or whatever, anytime there was another bimbo eruption. So...
Mm-hmm.
This is not a new tactic from our leaders in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I don't know, unless there is something to the rumor that's going around that the Pentagon or whoever it was, I guess it may have been the Department of Justice, were actually ready to release a real video,
mm-hmm.
something that was more substantive, and at the last minute a switch was made.
Well,
I don't know. And that story actually could be psyops on its own. So
true. Very true. Well, there are interesting things afoot in the government. Before we get to part two of our interview with Tom Horn as our prophecy series continues, the story that I am really surprised is not getting more traction from the United States public outside of Democrats who are looking to get something on the Republican administration is the NSA spying scandal. And I call this a scandal because it is really... It is a violation of the Constitution of the United
yes.
States of America. There's no question about it. It violates our Fourth Amendment rights that we have a right to expect
mm-hmm.
that we are safe from unreasonable search of our home and our private papers. And, of course, when the Constitution was written, they did not conceive of a day in which you could be sending private papers, quote, unquote, through the Internet, via email.
It's a presumption of guilt. They're
right.
just assuming that something is going on.
Well, here's an interesting thing, and we've talked about this before, about how you know the American public seems to be asleep in general when it comes to this. If you don't have anything to worry about, you know, anything to hide, you don't have anything to worry about. But as we've said before on this program, and I have to credit, again, Dave Emery and his For the Record program for kind of waking me up to this, this kind of spying has been going on through the NSA on American citizens for the last 60 years, probably. There's a story that was published in Salon today in an interview with an historian, an intelligence historian named Matthew Aid, A-I-D, who was reminded of a project, an NSA project called Shamrock, which was exposed in the mid-1970s when New York Congresswoman Bella Abzug
mm-hmm.
subpoenaed the head of Western Union and other telecoms and discovered that they had been funneling every telegram sent to and from the United States to overseas customers, recipients, for 30 years to the NSA. All telegram traffic to and from the United States going overseas or coming from overseas, went to the NSA for over 30 years. And this was what led to the 1978 Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA,
mm-hmm.
which set up the FISA court, which is exactly what the president and the NSA went around
mm-hmm. thumb their noses at.
Exactly. Now, I'm going to just quote from Matthew 8 in the interview with the reporter for Salon, and quoting, "We should be terrified that Congress has not been doing its job, and because of all of the checks and balances put in place to prevent this, have been deliberately obviated. In order to get this done, the NSA and White House went around all of the checks and balances. I am convinced that 20 years from now, we as historians will be looking back at this as one of the darkest eras in American history." Mm-hmm. "And we're just beginning to sort of peel back the first layers of the onion. We're hoping against hope that it's not as bad as I suspect it will be, but reality sets in every time a new article is published, and the first thing the Bush administration tries to do is quash the story. It's like the lawsuit brought by the Electronic Frontier Foundation against AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
The government's first reaction was to try and quash the lawsuit. That ought to be a warning sign that they're onto something. I'll tell you where this story will probably go next. Notice the USA Today article doesn't mention whether the internet service providers or cell phone providers or companies operating transatlantic cables like Global Crossing cooperated with the NSA. That's the next round of revelations." And then skipping down, he adds, "The newest system being added to the NSA infrastructure, by the way, is called Project Trailblazer, which was initiated in 2002 and which was supposed to go online about now, but is fantastically over budget and way behind schedule. Trailblazer is designed to copy the new forms of telecommunications, fiber optic cable traffic, cell phone communications, BlackBerry, and internet email traffic."
Mm-hmm.
End quote. In other words, they're not just looking at the phone numbers of the people we're calling. They want to read everything just like they read the old Western Union telegrams.
They're reading it all now.
Mm-hmm.
Trailblazer or not, they're reading it all now.
Yep. And it's been going on for 60 years, which, again, raises the question, if it's been going on for this long, why is it becoming an issue now in the press? Because there's an infighting going on inside the Beltway.
Oh, very, very much so. In fact, along that same line, there's an article that I found, not on my own. I have to thank Tom Horn for it because he had it on Raiders News Update. Great site.
Oh, yes.
It's a story by William Thomas, and it comes from his own site, Will Thomas' site, willthomas.net. And it is a very insightful piece called... "The U.S. troops prepared to attack Iran, Bush said to be seeking Persian Gulf incident."
A reference to the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which, by the way, we learned last year was bogus.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We have, I've saved the entire article to an archive on the site just in case.
It's an excellent piece.
It is a really good piece. And it shows how the infighting took off.
Mm-hmm.
When the military chiefs figured out that when they were being trained, or rather the troops being called up,
mm-hmm.
are told to stand by, all leaves were canceled between now and September 2006.
Mm-hmm.
The troops that have been asked to stand by, this is 10,000 plus, have been told to prepare for mountainous terrain.
Right,
this
right.
does not describe Iraq.
No, Iraq is flat and desert.
Mm-hmm.
Iran has lots of mountains.
Right.
And that's when the commanders went back to the what they call the National Command Authority, which is basically the Secretary of Defense, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and the President of the United States, and pointed out that M1 tanks don't fare well at 7,000 feet.
They don't. Neither do helicopters.
No. Heavy lift helicopters need more oxygen.
Here's what they were told. We'll move the stuff in with C-130s. Remember the story a few months ago that C-130s were being sent to Iraq? Don't forget, we got one of the most gigantic permanent bases being constructed in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And this huge, quote-unquote, embassy being constructed in Iraq. We are in Iraq. We are in Afghanistan. Iran is in the middle,
In the
folks.
Middle, right, yes. Interesting, they said that they were going to drop heavy armored vehicles like Humvees and Bradleys from C-130s. And the civilians who made this brilliant suggestion were informed by the generals that you cannot do it. It's been tested. And what happens when you drop a Humvee is that once the shredded canopy finally comes to Earth... the Humvee hits, bounces, sheds wheels and parts in all directions, and the chassis bounces for about 300 feet, the length of a football field. So it's not going to... This makes as much sense as the plan that Wesley Clark laid out to attack Kosovo by driving through Albania.
It does.
And crossing bridges that weren't wide enough to hold our armored vehicles.
Doesn't it take you back? Oh, Wesley Clark, we miss him. You know, this story goes on. You've got to read the whole article. You really do. It goes on to talk about how these planners said, well, okay, here's the deal. Here's what we'll do, because they'll be setting fires to all of the oil stuff. They'll be trying very hard to see us at night, and we'll just bomb the snot out of them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We'll carpet bomb everything.
Carpet bomb everything. And, you know, according to William Thomas's source, use this as an opportunity to field test bunker busting nuclear weapons.
Now, let us remind you about the weapon that's 700 tons big being tested in June.
Divine Strike. Well, they've put that on hold at least temporarily.
Yeah, well, only until June 23rd. I'm pretty sure it'll come off if they're really that determined to test it.
Yeah. Well, essentially, what this amounts to is a war plan that, according to Thomas, is like burning down the house to get at a piece of paper that's sitting in the middle of the dining room table.
Mm-hmm.
And the generals said, we want no part of this. This is not going to fly. Mm-hmm. And so the planners, the civilian planners who are coming up with this, basically said, all right, stand by and just wait. Don't move. Stay right there. And that's why the article is titled Waiting for a Persian Gulf Incident, or Seeking a Persian Gulf Incident.
Because if something like that happens.
Yes. If one of our vessels in the Persian Gulf, which of course is the narrow body of water in between Oman, Qatar, Dubai, the United Arab Emirates, and on the one side, on the west side, and Iran on the east, if something were to happen to a destroyer or an aircraft carrier, that could be blamed on Iran, whether it's Iran's fault or not. Remember the Maine? Yeah, which got blamed on Spain.
Now, this would lead to move to an email that we received from Captain Eric Maid this morning.
Oh, okay. All right.
Where he was saying that he believes something is going to happen.
Yes.
If you look at the numbers, he believes 666 is important.
Okay. All right.
Starting to look bad, isn't it?
It is. It is indeed.
The reason we have been in contact with Captain Eric May is because he is trying to get some very important information out, and you know, he has some inside tracks and some amazing insights, and we're trying to get him on very quickly. So we may, in fact, alter our schedule just a little bit over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, even though we're in the middle of a series on prophecy, the timing of events seems to be moving a little more quickly than we might have thought. So we'll see if we can set something up and get Captain May on soon. We are remiss in not having had him on sooner, I know. But he has been on a number of other programs, and we've tried to point out interviews and link to archived interviews that he's done with others like Zeph Daniel, Greg Szymanski, Daniel Ott. And in fact, Captain May was warning of a potential threat in Chicago during the first week of May to the Sears Tower, which, as we noted, is not only owned by the gentleman who owned the World Trade Center when it was hit on 9/11, it happens to sit in the zip code 60606 in Chicago. We did get past the first week of May, and the terror drill, which was in Chicago, taking place in Chicago during the first week of May. But he's also pointed out that there was, and this was confirmed, incidentally, by the fellows at the Northeast Intelligence Network, a terror event was thwarted at one of the refineries outside Houston within the last week. And I don't have the information at hand, but I know that he was he has been very vocal and very active in trying to warn people in that area of another potential attack, especially in the Texas City, Texas area, because of all of the oil infrastructure that's in that area.
Well, let me just summarize what he sent to us very briefly, just to give you an idea of why we feel this is really important enough to alter our schedule. This is something he sent out to his Gross Troop subscribers, and here's a summary of what he's essentially saying. If we combine the two important dates of June 5th and June 6th together with recent world events, we obtain the following extremely significant occult triplications. 222 days from the Muslim riots in Paris, 333 days from the London train bombings, 444 days from the second anniversary of the Iraq invasion, 555 days from November 28, 2004, which was the 333rd day of the year, with only 33 remaining. 666 in the date pattern and in the pattern until the end of the Mayan calendar. That's the 666.
Mm-hmm.
And then 777 days from the foiled Sears Tower attack. It would be really easy to sit there and say, ah, so what, these numbers, you could probably take any date and come up with stuff like that if you wanted to go back and find something that would. But the fact is, even though you and I and many listening, Derek, you and I, many mm-hmm. of our listeners, don't subscribe to these numbers, the occult people do.
Right, exactly. These
numbers are signatures. It's their way of signing their authorship of an event.
Right. So we'll get with Captain May and find a time where we can talk to him and get his information out to you via PID radio. Tom Horn is always a guy who's got some great information, and we tapped some of his research recently for our prophecy series, and we wanted to really hit an area in which he's done an awful lot of research. In fact, helped inspire his novel, co-written with his wife Nita, The Ahriman Gate, talking about the days of Noah and how they correlate to today.
You know, in fact, before we get to that report, we opened up our show with a recording that was taken from an actual 911 call.
Yes.
That we haven't referred to until this very moment. But I'll tell you what, if it chilled you to the bone when you heard it, it did the same thing to us. We'll put a link in the show notes as to the site where we found this real 911 call. And it's indicative of the sort of events that have been taking place all over the country
mm-hmm.
where people have been experiencing visitations, mm-hmm. Not happy ones. In fact, we mentioned last night about the screams that have been heard in a lot of different places.
Right, yeah.
There are sheep and cattle that have been killed,
mm-hmm.
Throats torn out. This is really, I think, something to be concerned about, because who knows what sort of genetic hybrids are out there.
Right. And thank you for the people. We've had a couple people who've sent in their stories by email, and we thank you for sharing those with us. In fact, what we may do at the forum, peeringintodarkness.com/forum, is set up a Frapper map where we can start mapping where these incidents take place.
Mm-hmm.
Someone had suggested putting a map up there with, you know, where everybody is listening. And
No, we
don't
want to
do that.
Privacy.
Yeah, we'd rather use it for something like this. Where are these sorts of incidents being reported?
Yeah.
So that might help us to at least determine a pattern, if there is one, or at least just get an idea for where these sorts of things are being detected.
Yep. Well, Tom Horn has the inside scoop, so here's part two of his interview with Derek on Genesis 6.
We pick up where we left off with our guest Tom Horn discussing where the transgenic movement is leading in terms of its relationship to end times prophecy. Tom, I guess the question is, if in fact, well, I guess, let me back up a step here before we go to where this is all leading. Do you believe that there are supernatural beings that are guiding, directing, or actively involved in the transgenic movement?
I believe that personally, but what I would say is that even if a person didn't buy that, they would have to be concerned with what's happening with transgenics, and a person would have to be blind not to see it as being identical in many ways as to what happened in Genesis 6. So it ought to concern Christians, but I think it ought to even just concern people who have questions about the ethics of creating chimeras, of creating creatures that have never existed before. Look at what we're doing right now. Number one, we're already creating animal-human chimeras for research. You were talking a little bit ago about how now they're, you were talking yesterday, I guess it was, about how the scientists are perplexed with how do you come up with enough eggs. And, you know, they've opened these clinics where women can donate their eggs, but there's so many ethical questions. First of all, we're just on the cutting edge of that. Enough eggs are not being donated. And secondly, even if they are, we have this ethical problem that's still, at least here in the United States, we're many years away from getting the kind of legislative approval that they would need to be able to farm these eggs in the mm-hmm. way that they would like to, although some scientists, and these are people that are PhDs, these are not monsters, are recommending that embryos, human embryos, up to a certain day age, like 14 days, be bred, literally in cloning farms, so that they could use them for harvesting stem cells. And the church of the church in Scotland actually has went ahead and endorsed the idea, and they've said they don't see an ethical problem as long as the embryos have their stem cells harvested before the age of 14 days, and then after that the embryos have to be destroyed. You mentioned raising these stem cell lines or harvesting stem cells from human chimeras, which is animals, which would have this same DNA product. And Chinese scientists there at the Shanghai Second Medical University recently successfully fused human cells with rabbit eggs. And they did this right after Huang had his problems. And they said, well, what are we going to do then? Because we need this material. We need this product. And rabbits tend to be very fertile. Mm-hmm. And so they created these just as an experiment. And then the chimeras were destroyed, and it was this whole joke about us creating Bugs Bunny and all of that. Then in Minnesota last year at the Mayo Clinic, they created pigs with human blood flowing through their bodies. And then at Stanford University in California, that's where they created these mice that had 10% human brains. But this year, if they carry through with it, they're going to do an experiment where they're going to create mice that have 100% human brains. And get this, Derek, Irv Wiseman, who's the director of Stanford University's Institute of Cancer Stem Cell Biology and Medicine, he's the guy that's going to oversee the creation of these mice with 100% human brains. It's going to be done by somehow injecting human neurons into the brains of these embryonic mice. But then the guidelines say that he has to watch for human cognitive activity. I want people to hear that. They have to, these humanized animals, the guidelines that are being drawn up, they have to watch, especially when they're dealing with changing their brains into human matter. They have to watch for human cognitive activity. And if these humanized animals start becoming self-aware, they then have to be destroyed. Can you even imagine at a time where we're talking about this?
Oh, man, Pinky and the Brain is kind of a funny cartoon show, but creating it in a lab for real is something else again. It's horrifying.
And the thing is, here's what's ironic about this. It's actually the animal rights people that are complaining about where these experiments could be going.
Well, I guess I'm not surprised about that.
Well, you would think that it would be the conservative Christians or whatever that'd be all over this.
You would
really
think so.
It's like Jeremy Rifkin. He's a biotechnology activist. He's one of the ones that's out there in the forefront that's opposed to crossing the species boundaries. But guess why? Because he believes animals have the right to exist without being tampered with or crossed with other species.
Right.
In fact, one of his examples, he says, imagine an experiment genetically engineering mice to produce human sperm and eggs, and then doing in vitro fertilization to produce a child whose parents would be a pair of mice. That's one area where transgenics is going. The second thing that transgenics is doing right now is this novelty science for human enhancement. The National Institute of Health, just approved funding a project at Case Law School to develop guidelines that are going to be used for reengineering the human species. And this is already approved. And I think it's almost something like $1 million just to draw up the guidelines. And then you have guys like Dr. Joe Rosen, who works at Dartmouth Medical Center in New Hampshire. And he's done science work for NASA and the Pentagon, things like that. But he wrote an article not long ago called "I'm Having My Wings Done," in which he said in all seriousness that within 5 years we're going to have humans with wings. And he's serious about this. He envisions using surgical techniques, as well as grafting, and then these new sciences of transgenics, where we will be able in the future to, you know, regrow lost limbs like reptoids. You've seen that in the news lately.
Mm-hmm.
And he envisions using those kind of sciences with transgenics to manipulate future humans into the image of angels and demons. In fact, he's made blueprints of these beings, and even has shown the blueprints and gave speeches at science conferences. And one of the science conferences last year, he said the only thing that's holding us back from advancing faster in this area, get this, is our Judeo-Christian conservatism.
Right, right.
So then of course, the next thing that's happening in transgenics is military applications.
Military applications, right.
And by the way, I'm not talking about theoretical sciences here. These are all examples of things we are already doing. They're already funded. You've read, no doubt, about the transgenic spider goats.
Yes.
That are already being manufactured. This would be a military application to produce spider silk in their milk.
Mm-hmm.
And spider silk's incredibly strong, but it's hard to create a farm where you milk spiders. So
that's right. They don't take kindly to it, yeah.
So they create a spider goat, a transgenic. And part of this creature's development, of course, was funded by the U.S. military and DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, because spider silk could be used to create things like cargo nets and other materials, maybe potentially bulletproof vests. I'm
right.
not sure what all they want to use it for, but it's light and it's very strong, and so they see those kind of uses. But other well-funded projects that DARPA is working on with relation to transgenics is more reminiscent of something like Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, where the wizard Saruman is fashioning his monstrous Uruk-hai to wage this relentless, remoteless war. Because in this case, DARPA is working on a very real scheme, and they're doing it for the Pentagon. And in this idea, and I know this sounds sci-fi, but they're actually doing this. They're actually shoveling billions of tax dollars into what is called the, it's taking me a minute to remember, but the Extended Warfighter Program, the Warfighter Enhancement Program, that's what it's called. And anybody that wants to go to Google or Yahoo and just type that in, Warfighter Enhancement Program, and they can go and read DARPA's own material on this. I mean, it literally involves injecting young men and women with hormonal and neurological genetic concoctions. Secondly, by the way, it includes implanting microchips and electrodes into their bodies in order to control their internal organs. And then thirdly, it applies them with these drugs that deaden some of their normal human tendencies, like the need to sleep and the fear of death, and furthermore the reluctance to kill their fellow human beings, so that these transgenic soldiers can literally fight day and night, almost be impervious to pain and the need to slow down and the need for food, and also to be able to kill without remorse. But then the fourth thing is that, and this is according to DARPA's own material on this, it actually involves altering the genetic code of these soldiers by modifying bits of their DNA to fashion literally a new human specimen that just would function like a machine. And there again, if people want to know more about the military's Pandora box in transgenics, well, first of all, they could read the fictional side of it in my book, The Ahriman Gate. But if they want to just skip that and look at the real science, I mean, they can go to their search engines tonight. And type in these questions and these phrases that I'm using, and they'll find out what I'm talking about is true. And then the fourth thing, Derek, which brings us back to our subject, the fourth way that transgenics is being used, of course, is transhumanism. And transhumanism, for me, is the biggie, because this is the idea that genetic modification and transgenics mixed with other biotechnocogno sciences are leading us now into the next stage in human evolution, and that by combining these sciences, we're literally poised now to redefine what it means to be a human, and to move beyond our current confines, like these guys like Ray Kurzweil and others have been prophesying. There was an article in the news just a few days ago that was talking about on April 29th, this medical news today, Case Law School in Cleveland receiving this $773,000. This was the article I was looking for a second ago, from the National Institutes of Health to develop guidelines for the use of human subjects in what could be the next frontier in medical technology, and that is genetic enhancement. I'm reading this as a BP press release. Professor of Law and Bioethics Mac Melman will be leading a team of law professors, physicians, and bioethicists in a two-year project aimed at establishing guidelines for altering the human species through genetic enhancement, end quote. Can you imagine that?
Well, we got to make sure that it's all according to law. Yeah, just like the Final Solution was. I guess the big question, though, is then what ultimately is the point? Why is all of this happening? What is the driving force behind this sea change in scientific and legal research?
Well, there's two ways to look at it. Of course, to a Darwinist or a humanist, there was I think 2 weeks ago at Oxford University. They hosted the Human Enhancement Conference under the title of the First World Forum on Science and Civilization, and that's exactly what they were talking about. But to them, it was, first of all, the need to develop new guidelines, new ethical guidelines that redefine what it means to be a human. One of their conferences there that was led by kind of a who's who of futurists and biotechnology experts, panelists, technologists, transhumanists. One of their conferences there was called "The Meaning of Human Nature: What is Natural About Us and Does It Matter?" And then the second conference was the governance of human transformation, and then the third one was shaping alternate futures. So the thing is, Derek, I would point to in particular is this whole idea that some people now believe that they have the right, that it's a basic human right, and it ought to be a constitutional right to choose for themselves their own destiny. And if improving the quality of their life means enhancing them from what they are now to a transhuman status, they believe that that's their right to do that. And so we're literally talking about redefining now in our courts of law, and it's starting in our law schools, of course, because that's where they need to train these little future minds of mush to redefine what it will mean to be a human and what rights transhumanists will have, not only over at the Oxford University, but May 26th, what is that, 2 weeks from now, a week and a half from now?
Mm-hmm.
That at the Stanford University Law School is hosting the Human Enhancement Tech and Human Rights Conference. And their press release says this. It says, "With the Human Enhancement and Human Rights Conference, we seek to begin a conversation with the human rights community," excuse me, bioethicists, legal scholars, and political activists, "about the relationship of enhancement technologies to human rights, cognitive liberty, and bodily autonomy." See, those are very important key words to these folks.
Uh-huh.
Human rights, cognitive liberty, and bodily autonomy. "It is time," their press release says, "it is time to begin the defense of human rights in the era of human enhancement." Now, listen to some of the topics that they're going to be covering here in a week or two. And this is just day one, human enhancement and control of the body. Number one, how much morphological diversity can the polity sustain? Number two, animal-human chimeric enhancement and animal rights. See how we're back to that?
Right, sure.
Number three, reproductive cloning, irrelevant, futile, or an important battle. Number four, germline engineering and the consent of the future generations. Number five, procreative liberty and the genetic enhancement of children. And then number six, the medicalization of transgenderism. And this is just day one, but look where this is taking place. Stanford University Law School in Stanford, California.
Now, is it important to note that Stanford has a long history of connections with the United States intelligence community through the Stanford Research Institute?
Well, I think what you're seeing is that among PhDs, among Darwinists, among secularists, among humanists, that this it really just goes along with their worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And now people are seeing that the next step in human evolution is going to be one that's going to be assisted by technology. And I think this, by the way, that's kind of where it starts getting tricky. Because both of those conferences that I referred to, the one that's coming up at Stanford and the one that was just held at Oxford University, both of them reflect what you would find elsewhere in other transhuman conferences. And that is this need to change the definition of what it means to be a human.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason why they need to do that, Derek, is because the sanctity or the equality of life ethic, which is a Judeo-Christian idea, holds that all human beings have equal moral worth, regardless of their ability or capacity, whether they are in a wheelchair, they can become the president of the United States of America, or whatever, that society appreciates the value of life, that is the objective standard. But now that's being threatened by what, if you go and read the material that's coming out of these conferences, there's a brand new theory that's called personhood theory.
Personhood.
Personhood. And personhood holds that rights only belong to so-called persons, which in these conferences is a status that's earned by certain cognitive capacity.
Uh-huh.
And you can see exactly where that would be going.
Yeah.
So if personhood theory supplants sanctity of life as the governing ethic of society, then it would open the door to such things as harvesting organs from people like Terry Schiavo.
Right.
Or permitting biotechnologists to farm cloned fetuses for use in drug testing or experiments in genetic engineering, like we were talking about a moment ago, that they might need in order to produce all of the raw material they need to enhance themselves and improve their own lives, because persons would have the legal rights to farm these products from non-persons.
Have you seen the movie called The Island?
I did see that.
Yeah, this is exactly the issue, I think, that was raised by The Island. Sharon and I have seen it just once, but it's already become one of our favorite movies. But it sounds exactly like what you're describing, people who are raised specifically to provide spare parts.
Well, at another university, while I was waiting to come on the show a little bit earlier, I was reading a story about American scientists who are planning now at Harvard University to clone humans at Harvard.
Hmm.
And the whole idea behind it is in order to farm their stem cells to use that for research on diabetes or Parkinson's disease or how it might even be used to accelerate lifespans among these new persons. And that was a Bloomberg story, so it ought to be fairly legitimate. Another thing I think that this new ethic could do is open the door to these human-animal hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
Not just transhumans in the sense that we've used other human DNA to enhance some part of them to give them a greater lifespan, but now we're talking about transhumans, beyond being human, something completely other than what God created, a chimera, but an intelligent one, one that can walk around and think and talk and kind of remind you of the X-Men movies where you have Wolverine, you know, who's the leader of the X-Men, and I guess he's part Wolverine and part human and part exoskeleton. He's a transhumanist. He's the future.
Mm-hmm.
And if people hear me talking about that, and they think that I'm really stretching credulity here, think back. I mean, when I was a kid, it was Buck Rogers in the 21st century. And we not only did everything that they envisioned in those days, we are so far beyond Dick Tracy's gigantic watch that he wore.
That's right, yeah.
And tucked into. So what we're envisioning now and what we're seeing in popular media, including what we're seeing in the films, can definitely be part of our future if God allows it to go that far. Look, for example, futurist James Hughes literally advocates uplifting chimpanzees genetically so that they would have human intellectual capacity. And he's advocating that as a way of proving that personhood and not humanness is the ticket to citizenship. So then, of course, you know, you reach the real point, and that is that transhumanism is advocating the creation of a post-human species that would include using farming human embryos for their products, using animal genes, and all of this in order to increase strength or make ourselves more acute, which then, of course, takes us back to how we opened this series. It starts sounding like the reinvention of Old Testament Nephilim.
Right, and that's where we're going to break for today, and we're going to talk in our next segment about how this all plays out in the timeline of the last days, which are still ahead. And we'll do that as we continue our discussion, fascinating discussion, with Tom Horn, publisher of Raiders News Update, author, with his wife Nita, of the Ahriman Gate, next time on PID Radio.
Well, you know what? Tom Horn has one more installment in this fabulous interview, so I know you want to hear that. That'll be coming up tomorrow on PID Radio.
And don't forget his new e-zine called Anomalous, which is a biblical look into the paranormal, ufology, anomalous animal sightings or soundings, those sorts of things, because these things do happen in the world. We can't close our eyes to them just because we've adopted a Christian worldview. If you are a Christian and you truly believe that the worldview shaped by God, the Bible, is true and accurate, then you have to fit everything into it. If you're keeping things out of your worldview, if you're closing your eyes and ears to things that are happening around you because you're afraid it will rock your boat, rock your worldview, it won't fit into your worldview, it can't be explained by your worldview, then you're not being honest.
That's true. By the way, we had in the, just the last few days, we asked our listeners, and you've let us know whether or not we should have blather.
Yes, more red hot blather.
More red hot blather.
Or whether we should exercise better blather control.
You know, as you get older, it gets tougher and tougher. Yeah,
the answer from listeners was, depends.
Oh, that's really bad.
You don't hear this on TBN. I'll tell you that right now.
No, and aren't you glad? Well, we have everybody wrote back and said that they do want to definitely hear the interviews, but they want to hear more from us as well. So we're probably going to continue with the format that we had been using for some time. Monday and Friday, blather to our heart's content. Well, not to our heart's content. We'd blather for hours if we did that, but we will blather just the two of us on Mondays and Fridays, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday we'll have interviews.
Yeah, I think that's a good balance, strikes a good balance, because we do want to get some other viewpoints in here besides our own. But
and you can only wash so many spice jars.
That's right.
And clean so many other things.
But as Sharon pointed out, we do love talking. And talking with each other. And that's basically what we do when we do this program here. And that's why we could go and continue going. But we know that your time is valuable and you've got lives as well, which is why we try to keep the program condensed at least under an hour, if not under half an hour.
You know, seriously, if we recorded every conversation that Derek and I had during the course of a day that had to do with all of these dots, we would have a show that lasted 5 or 6 hours per day because we spend almost all of our time together talking about this stuff.
Yeah, which is
and we love doing it. We're not boring at all. We really love doing it.
But anyway,
and we hold hands while we're doing it.
That's true. And makes the brothers-in-law really jealous.
I think ill
is more the correct word. We welcome your input at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And you can always join us at the forum, peeringintodarkness.com/forum, where we do have the new forums up and running. A couple of nice boards where you can weigh in on incident tracking and preparedness.
Yes, and till tomorrow then. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Have a great day, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear. A better day.